Last year was a good year for your girl. I've been keeping up with the pace. So don't be coming with the bull. Had a good year, now it's time to see my face. Yeah. Ain't worried about the fame. Kinda over all the hard times I've been through.
Love brought me to.
And I finally feel loose. My heart I choose. My heart been broke down in the dirt and I finally see blue.
Raise hands, feel focused. And I'm done being broken.
Welcome back to Moms and Martinis, a safe space created to have tough conversations about the obstacles we face while navigating this journey called life. My name is Kira and I'm your host. But before we start this off, let's talk about this clip, the music clip, okay? If you do not follow me on social media, I highly recommend that you just head on over to Twitter and Facebook at Moms and Martinis and over at Instagram at Moms and Martinis Podcast. And on these platforms where I tend to share a lot of the music that I listen to. Music to me is music for therapy for my soul. Okay. That's what music is. It feeds my soul. It helps me through so many things. So this week's episode, I wanted to highlight the song High by Ledisi. So this is only a 30-second clip. If you have not listened to this song, then go ahead and do so. But the lyrics say, last year was a good year for your girl. I've been keeping up with the pace. So don't be coming with the bull. I had a good year. Now I'm starting to see my face. Ain't worry about the fate. Kinda over all the hard times I've been through. Love brought me to you. And in this case, I'm talking about you as in myself. And I'm kind of feeling loose. In my heart, I choose. My heart's been broke down in the dirt and I finally see blue. Raise hands, feel focused. I'm done being broken. Whew. Let that sizzle in your spirit, okay? I'm done with it. This episode, I'm going to talk about mental health and my journey with mental health. And as I talk about this, I do want to preface this by saying, by no way, shape, form, or fashion am I saying that anyone with struggling with any type of mental health is broken. Okay, that's not what I'm saying. But there was a point in time in my life where I felt as though I was broken. And I committed to myself to not want to live like that, to not want to continue to feel like that. And I set out on a journey for freedom, to live my life wholeheartedly, to stand in my truth and own this life, own the cards that had been dealt to me. And what the poem say, life for me ain't been no crystal stair, but I'm about to pull back the veil and get honest with you. I hate that. Even more transparent because I'm always honest, but I want to just dive in a little bit deeper and allow you to get to know me a little bit more. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and I'm just going to start this off. My name is Kira. I have bipolar, clinical depression, and anxiety. That's my truth. So in this episode, I'm going to talk to you about just this whole thing, when it started, how it started, the ups and downs, what it is, and how I am today, like where I am now. The goal of this is to help break the stigma. There's a lot of things that occur in life that people, society tend to say, that these are milestones or highlights or things that make you, air quote, normal or successful and, you know, all of these things. So I really fight hard to achieve those and also some just other personal accomplishments. But another reason why I like to achieve it is when I meet people and they see the level of success that I have professionally, or the materialistic things, the house, the car, those things, or even engaging in certain conversations in the way that I'm able to clearly articulate myself. In those moments is when I like to tell people, and guess what else? I have bipolar. And those, to me, create like these aha moments for people to begin to just remove any stigmas or preconceived notions or stereotypes that people have around mental health, and especially bipolar, because it's something that I live with every single day. So I'm going to jump into this. I do have some notes. So if you hear like the mouse clicking in the background or something, then just know I'm just looking at the notes that I typed out for this. There was a point in time in my life that I was ashamed of this, and I never wanted people to know what I was dealing with. So I suffered privately. And the more I began to put language to it and talk through it, the more empowered I felt. So I'm no longer ashamed about it. I do pick and choose who I have conversations with it, because I don't think everyone deserves that. So bringing it to this platform, the podcast, it was my way of saying, you know, insert Diana Ross, I'm coming out. Like, this is like, it's a part of me. It's not who I am. It's just something that I live with. And because of that, I want to make sure that I'm advocating for healthy discussions and dialogues about it. But anyway, let me just jump into it. So let's talk about what is mental health. Now, according to mentalhealth.gov, mental health includes the emotional, psychological, and social well-being. So these are things that affect how we think, feel, act. It also helps us determine how we handle stress, how we relate to others, and how we make choices. So mental health is very much so important from adolescence, childhood, you know, all the way up to adulthood. So every part of your life, mental health is important. So let me go back. You know, people think about therapy. It's like, go back to your childhood. But honestly, that's where it starts. So I grew up in a very religious household, and the notion or thought of therapy wasn't necessarily used. Like, this is therapy. However, the church that I grew up in, we would go to counseling, right? That's what we would call it there. We would do individual counseling and family counseling with the ministers and leaders and elders of the church. So it was a concept that I was used to, especially around family therapy, talking with my mom through a lot of different things. But this was mainly when I was acting out about something. It wasn't preventative care or maintenance per se. It was, I was doing something that was against the religion, or opposite of the desire of the religion, that did not model what it was that I was being taught to be. So I needed counseling. And of course, it's counseling. We talked through some things, but it was heavily based in the Word. And when I say the Word, the Bible. So there was some scriptures. There was a lot of prayer and casting out and calling upon God and higher powers and, you know, rebuking of certain spirits. So that was my foundation of therapy. When I was about 15, my mom passed away and I moved with my father. And that's when I was introduced to clinical therapy or talk therapy. And my father, thank you so much, introduced me to grief counseling. And I was so reluctant to it because it was so very different than what it was that I knew. We didn't start off with prayers and speaking in tongues, and there was no Bible reference, and the things that I was being asked to talk about, I just wasn't used to it. I was a teenager and still trying to work through a lot of things. Not only had I lost my mother, but I relocated to a new place from Georgia to Maryland. So that was a huge shock and adjustment. I was met with a stepmother and step siblings. And it was just a lot. So it was beyond the grief. And I just wasn't receptive. I tried a little bit, but I wasn't receptive. Fast forward, I think I was in my 11th grade. And I remember we were in a class and they were playing a movie. And I just put my head down on the desk. And I began to think and experience these racing thoughts. And I went on into a full-fledged panic attack, where I had trouble breathing, heaving back and forth, crying uncontrollably, didn't really understand what was happening with my body. I really felt like I was having an outer body experience. And I had one of my class members, you know, walk me down to the nurse and walking out in the hallway. And he was talking to me like, "Are you okay?" And he just, you know, was trying to calm me down. It was the first like panic attack that I can remember that I have. And I just did not know what was going on with me. Still nothing happened, right? So you're gone. I had a fairly good, you know, high school years. So I'm going on in life. I graduate, I have a child, and I'm met with this relationship with domestic violence. And amidst the domestic violence, it was trouble on the home front. I was at this point living in DC. My core family is in Atlanta. I'm not really having a good relationship with my family that is there in Maryland. I had discourse within my friendship, and I meet this guy who I'm thinking I'm going to be swept away with. I'm pregnant by him, and he's abusive. He's flat out abusive in every way, financially, mentally, physically, emotionally, using his male privilege, like very chauvinistic. He was abusive, and that caused me to spiral in a way that I had never spiraled before. And I began to smoke weed a lot. It got to the point that I smoked so much weed that I promise you, I was not getting high. It was just, it was what they call it, wake and bake. I would get up, smoke. At the time I was managing a bank, I would go and open the bank and leave and smoke. Come back, do what I need to do on my lunch break, because I work like 10 minutes from the job, leave, smoke. Close the bank down, leave, smoke, smoke. Like I was smoking so much. And I was afraid of doing other drugs because I do have family members that were drug addicts. And I was so afraid. I'm like, if this is no longer getting me high, like what is it that I'm going to have to take or drink or shoot in my arm or whatever to really like take what is going on with me away? So I went back to my roots, which was the counseling in the church, and remembering some of the therapy when I was going to grief therapy. So I reached out to my insurance company and found a doctor to go and talk to. And at that time, I was diagnosed with bipolar and depression and anxiety. And the things that I was experiencing, these extreme highs and lows, was described to me as mania. I had no idea what bipolar was. Any experience or knowledge that I had with bipolar came from growing up in the South, like, oh, he's touched. or someone that is maybe didn't have bipolar, but someone that was acting out, or I just say, oh, he's crazy, yeah, bipolar, that type of thing, or somebody that was a veteran that came home and they said, oh, he's, you know, those are the things where you come back from the war and like, oh, he's crazy. So that was my familiarity with it. So I was still confused. I was young. At this time, I was 19, 20 years old. And I didn't know what to do with it. So let me look at my notes here because I can ramble about this. So let me look at my notes. So first off, let's talk about what bipolar is. So bipolar disorder is a mental illness that causes dramatic shifts in a person's mood, energy, or ability to think clearly. So people with bipolar extreme experience extreme highs and then extreme lows. And when they experience these things, this is what's known as mania. And then, so the high is that mania, that low is the depression. And it would differ for different people, but that's what it really is. So oftentimes when you hear people that are moody, and people say, oh, you're bipolar, because you're moody, there's these shifts. But for people that have bipolar, it's a different type of shift. Okay. It's something that's chemically imbalanced within the person. I mean, oftentimes people have to have medications or other forms of coping techniques to really help it. And I'll talk about that a little bit later. The average age of onset is about 25. And typically, you won't see it a lot in teens or people with childhood. However, there are some cases where children can be diagnosed with bipolar. But in my case, it was a little bit earlier. And I think it was just brought on by all of the grief and things that was happening with me and the traumas that I was experiencing in my life. So the other thing that I want to be clear about in terms of bipolar is that to be diagnosed with bipolar, a person must have had experienced at least one episode of mania, or what we call hypomania. And hypomania is like a milder version of mania that doesn't necessarily include like psychotic episodes. And people with hypomania can often function like in social situations or at work. So at this time with my bipolar, I was still going to work. Remember, I had a child, so I was paying bills, making sure my child ate and just functioning, but I was still just like imbalanced and could not necessarily pinpoint why. And even when things seemingly were good, I just felt off, right? So the other thing with bipolar, although someone with bipolar may feel like an elevated mood or mania like coming on, especially after depression, the high does not stop at like this comfortable or controllable level. That's the mania. So it's like, oh yeah, I should be happy, but it's like this overwhelming feeling of bliss. So let me put this into perspective. This is why I was afraid to take any other type of drug when I was smoking weed a lot. Because at one point I wasn't getting high, but when I would go through these cycles of mania, like I felt like the weed was psychedelic or something because of just everything, my feelings, my mood. I was like overly like walking on cloud nine. And sometimes it didn't have any particular reason why. You know, it was just I could not control how I was feeling. I was feeling like Kim Possible, and I can do it all and conquer it all. But the other part of that is I could be so high, but then I could rapidly just go to being like irritated. My behavior could be unpredictable. I would make poor decisions. And although I consider myself to be highly intelligent, and then at that time, you know, I had some level of intelligence or smarts, with the bipolar, it's just like your judgment is off. like you just cannot make these good judgments. And what happens is people with bipolar, and even in my experience, it causes you to act like impulsively or make reckless decisions and take unusual risk. So there was a point in time in my life when I say I was out there. I was drinking, smoking, stripping, sexing, hanging with the worst of the worst, just putting myself in situations that I knew were wrong. But again, my judgment was impaired. And my parents and my family members just could not understand why. And I didn't even understand why. And I still had not shared with anybody I had bipolar. And at this time, I was not taking medications. So it just seems like I was reckless. And the thing to understand about bipolar is that when you're in a manic state, you are like unaware of negative consequences of your actions. Like your mind cannot fathom the reality of it all. No matter if you know logically that these things are wrong and that there's a level of consequences that come along with them, again, it's a chemical imbalance or shift in your mind and your body where you're just unaware of any negative consequences. So I had like this real flip it, fuck it kind of attitude. But remember, in the hypomania stage, I'm still going to work. I have a good job at the bank. You come in, I'm closing small business loans, making investment deals. But at night, I'm stripping and smoking and drinking. It was unnecessary. But a part of it, when you think about it, the being impulsive and things like that, my spending habits were off. I was just spending reckless for my money, any and everything I wanted. Going on shopping sprees, just buying hella things. So because of it just being impulsive and how I was spending my money, a part of it, no, I really did not have to supplement my income by shaking my ass and being a stripper, right? I didn't have to do that, but I had to do it because I was so reckless with my money in other ways because I was not dealing with the bipolar. So that's just one thing. I'm trying to stay on track here, but I do have a lot of notes. And the information that I'm sharing with you comes from the National Association of Mental Illness, or NAMI, or NAMI. So you can go to their website. So this is where I'm getting my information in terms of the clinical reasons. But even when I'm reading through all of these things, I'm like, yes, this, all of these things happened to me. And I can go on and on with the stories about it and how these things were so evident and clear in my life. And for a long time, I just was not caring for it the way I needed to care for it. So hopefully you're following me. So another thing to note with bipolar disorder is that sometimes suicide is an ever-present danger with people that have bipolar, especially when that person is in a manic state, because the feelings and emotions are so high and rampant that it's hard to control. So the best thing to do, and what I have learned to do, is figure out what my red flags are and my triggers. So I'll know how to manage those things so that I'm not getting there. However, there was a period in my life that I was very suicidal and even attempted suicide on a number of occasions through ingesting pills. And I don't want to say it was my last experience because it wasn't. My scariest experience with the suicide was when I was pregnant with my second daughter. And I was going through some things with my ex-husband. And it triggered me so badly that I took a bottle full of sleeping pills, pregnant. I had to be, that pregnancy was horrible. I think I was like six, seven months pregnant when that happened. Then I got arrested, 9 months pregnant. Like, that was a horrible pregnancy. But the suicide, yeah. I was like 6 or 7 months when I took all of these pills. And my ex-husband, bless his heart. I don't want to say he didn't care, but he was just like, did not necessarily have the tools to deal with it. But thankfully called like the doctor, the ambulance and everything. And I was admitted into a psychiatric facility and to be on watch and to get like the systems out and making sure I didn't harm my baby. Thank you, God. Thank you, God. Whew. Your girl been through some stuff in her life. She's been through some things. And this is why I want to make sure that I'm spreading the word and putting the light on this, shining the light on what this is and the things that people are experiencing in their life. So let's talk about it. There's more. Like, I'm going to come back and just dissect a lot of these things later on. But today is just like the awareness of it all. So let's talk about the lows of bipolar. So with bipolar depression, it can be debilitating where, I mean, you cannot get out of the bed. And I've had those days and sometimes still endure days like that where I can be perfectly fine the day before, and I'll wake up and just like, I just can't do it. I can't get out the bed. I don't want to wash my face, brush my teeth, take a bath. I cannot care for my children. I cannot care for myself. I just cannot. Even when my mind wants to, and I know that I need to, and there is no particular reason why I'm feeling this way, I do. And I can just not, I cannot move. I have had to call out of work a few times because of this, you know, which was, I guess, the silver lining in this is when I've learned like not to have to give a reason. My job has PTO. My paid time off. So only thing I'm going to do is just let you know I will not be coming in today. That's the only thing. Do what you have to do, job. But right now I need to care for myself. So that happens with bipolar and like it's uncontrollable. You can't predict it. Typically when people are experiencing this depressive episode, it can be where you're having difficulties falling asleep or staying asleep or you're sleeping way too much. I know that I have prescribed sleep medication to try to help me, but I vary depending on what it is. Sometimes the prescribed medicine doesn't work. So I have to do like a combination of melatonin to help me fall asleep quickly. And then the prescribed sleep medication for in order for me to stay asleep. And then sometimes I'll just use like an over-the-counter sleep aid, but the sleeping is off. There have even been times that I have not slept for days at a time. When I'm talking about days, like 3, 4, 5 days of zero sleep. I can laugh about it now. I remember one time I did not sleep for like 4 or 5 days. I was up, I painted my entire, I painted my entire downstairs, like up painting. Okay. Do I even know how to paint walls like that? At that time, no, but I was up painting, just doing things. The other thing too, when like I'm having these mania spells, at one point I didn't know what to do with them. So I was all over the place being reckless. But as I began to really come into identifying the signs and wanting to better and live past all of this. What happens now? And the silver lining, how it has helped me in my career is that I can have mania and work on a project. And if I'm not sleeping for a whole week, you know how much work I get done for this project? So that's how I've learned to just like turn it around and make it work out in my favor. So although I know now how to live with it and how to get through it, the depression part and the anxiety part is what I'm really working through now. Let's talk about the depression. Bipolar depression is a bitch, okay? When people are depressed, or when I'm depressed, even like the smallest of decisions is overwhelming. And when I say I will be so like, what are we going to eat for dinner? Did I pick up my kid? Just everything. I'll become overwhelmed and flustered in these things. And then adversely, I can also just become obsessed with just thoughts and feelings, loss, grief, failure, helplessness. So when you don't have control over those types of things, then it could lead to suicidal thoughts. And as I shared with you, I had those thoughts of suicide and even trying to carry through the acts of suicide. So now when I'm having these thoughts and things, I have learned different methods of coping with them. And I also now take medication, but I'm going to talk about my life with bipolar without medication. But these are things that you want to be aware of. So a depressive symptoms that obstructs a person's ability to function. When you're thinking about bipolar, it can happen for it will happen like every single day for at least like 2 weeks. So think about it. Every single day, you're feeling overwhelmed with helplessness, fear, personal failure, all these things, just like the bottom of the dirt that for at least 2 weeks when you're not able to get out of your bed, you're not able to function, you're not able to do anything. I've had that at one point, my worst. This happened to me for probably a good 2 years, a whole two years that I was feeling like this. So when things like that happen with the bipolar, then sometimes it's hard to treat. So you have to work with a medical professional to come up with some type of customized plan to help you through all of that, okay? Now, according to the National Association of Mental Health, scientists have not yet discovered a single cause for bipolar disorder, but there are several factors that contribute to it. So let me talk about the factors that can go into bipolar and why a person can have bipolar. Because like I said, mine was stress-induced because of everything that was going on in my life. But there are other reasons why a person can get it. So the first is genetics. I don't know if my parents have it. I know my father doesn't. I don't know if my mom did or not. But my mom was like a holy roller. Like the leaves of the trees is for the healing of the nation. And that helped contribute to that thought process, rather it helped to contribute to the reason why she passed away so young, because she just didn't believe in doctors and everything. And she was just going to pray it all away. But anyway, so if she did have it, she probably didn't even know it. You know what I mean? So, and a lot of my family is like, well, I don't know. But anyway, let me just go over the factors that can contribute to a person that will have bipolar. So you have genetics. So the chances of developing bipolar disorder are increased in children. If their parents or siblings have the disorder, but the role of genetics is not absolute. So a child's family can have a history of bipolar, but that child doesn't necessarily develop it. So this is something that scientists are still working through. So, but that's just like a caveat. So it may or may not apply. The other option, as I mentioned, mine was caused or induced through stress. So stress, when you think about bipolar, this can be a stressful event such as a death in the family, an illness, a difficult relationship, divorce, financial problems. All of these things can trigger a manic or depressive episode, and the person that's dealing with it, it can help play a role in the development of the illness. The other thing is it could be the person's brain structure and their function of the brain. So doctors have done brain scans, but the brain scans cannot necessarily diagnose a person with bipolar. Yet researchers have identified that there are subtle differences in the average size or the activation of some of the brain structures of people that have bipolar. But the main thing out of all of this is the stress. Okay, so genetics, maybe. Brain structure, maybe. Stress, hell yeah. And that's where mine came from, stress. So to be diagnosed with bipolar, what happens is you go to your doctor, okay? Your doctor, okay? Your doctor. And your doctor has to perform a physical examination. They're going to talk. They're going to get you to do surveys, ask you questions. They're going to do labs, right? So they take your blood, all of these things to determine if you have bipolar. So while bipolar cannot be like seen in your blood or tested that way, what they're wanting to do is eliminate any other illnesses that you may have, like a thyroid condition or something else that can show up as bipolar symptoms. So that's why they will ask for your blood work in some cases. Now, to be diagnosed with bipolar, so after you do those tests and examinations, that person must have had experienced at least one episode of mania or hypomania. So remember that mania is extreme highs, extreme lows. The hypomania is just like this, like a little mini roller coaster where you're still able to function, but it's like this mini roller coaster where you're irritable. No one can predict your mood, right? You're just all over the place and you're taking these risks and don't know why. Maybe you're overly sexually active or spending a lot of money. So that is the hypomania. So a mental health care professional will be able to use the diagnostic and statistical manual of mental disorder, and that's called the DSM, and they use that to diagnose the type of bipolar that you can be experiencing. So there are different types of bipolar. It's four different types. The type that I have is bipolar 1 disorder. And bipolar 1 disorder is an illness that when people experience one or more episodes of mania. Some people that are diagnosed with bipolar 1 have episodes of mania and depression. But the depression doesn't necessarily mean that you have bipolar. Sometimes people are just depressed without bipolar, okay? But I had both. And my mania was all off the charts. And again, typically if a person is having mania, then it has to last for at least 7 days or be so severe that the person has to be in the hospital before they're like, okay, yeah, this person has bipolar, okay? And then bipolar 2 disorder is like a subset of bipolar 1. And this is when people are just shifting back and forth with the hypomania episodes, but they've never had like a full manic episode. So those are like the two types of bipolar. Remember, there are four. The third type of bipolar is what they call psychothematic disorder or psychothymia. Am I saying it right? Psychothymia. This is a unstable, like chronically unstable mood state. So people that experience the hypomania or mild depression for like at least 2 years, then that person will have this type of it. And usually if they have briefer periods, then it's about 8 weeks. And then the last bipolar disorder is like this. First off, let me go back to psychomania. It's very rare. It's rare. Okay. I think I went through it at one point, but I never went to the doctor throughout that 2 year period. So I could have possibly been diagnosed with it, but I just did not seek the help that I needed for it. And then the fourth is the bipolar disorder, or what we call other specified or some type of unspecified. And that's when a person does not meet the criteria of one or two or the psychothymia, but still experience periods of clinical significance, abnormal mood elevation. Okay, so those are the four types of bipolar. So the other thing with bipolar disorder, it can be treated. It can be managed in several ways. And this is what I'm talking about, where I found my freedom. Let me see. So with me, even though I had lived with bipolar, I was on and off with medication, not really consistent with it. And honestly, I was married at the time, and I just did not necessarily have the support that I needed to really get the treatment. And it was so many things and triggers that was happening in that relationship where I needed to get support the most, but I just did not. But anyway, my divorce was like the best thing that happened to me. Because not only was I able to come into the fullness of myself, but at that point, I began to take my mental health a lot serious, you know, a lot, way more serious than I had before. And I began to do a lot of things. So part of what I began to do, and this is how you can also treat bipolar if you have it, or if you go to the doctor and your doctor tell you have it, okay, this is what worked for me. I'm not saying that it's going to work for you, but this is what worked for me. So these are some tips. You can do psychotherapy. So psychotherapy or talk therapy or cognitive behavior therapy or family-focused therapy. The main thing is therapy, okay? So your girl gets her therapy even throughout this current state of the world. I do my video chats with my therapist. Okay. So I talk to my therapist often. The other is the medications. So these would be your mood stabilizer, your antipsychotic medications, or antidepressants, right? I haven't taken antipsychotics. I've never been on that stage, but I've had the mood stabilizer and antidepressants. There has been periods of times in my life that I had life without medication, and that was post my divorce as well. So I was on medications, and then I began to wean myself off, and I began to learn about me more. That's when I really got into books and travel and hiking and planting and gardening and, you know, getting into the community. And I really created this life of Zen and was removing people and things that caused me stress. So those things that was triggering me, I removed those from my life. And when I was able to do that, as well as incorporate a lot of the coping mechanisms like breathing, meditation, exercising, that's when I was heavy into like CrossFit. I would run 5Ks, 10Ks, train for marathons, and do all of these things. Like really, I went vegan for like 3 years, and I was not on medication. Now, what caused me to get back on medication now is that I started dating this guy who turned out to be abusive. And even before that, I began to feel myself spiraling because of the things that were occurring in the relationship, and it began to trigger me in ways that I had not felt in years. And when I would tell him that, he would say that I was punishing him for the people, what people had done to me in my past. I'm like, no, I'm just saying that, you know, you are exhibiting behaviors of things that caused me to spiral before, and you're doing these things to me. But anyway, This Negro had me have to go back into therapy, and that's a whole nother Oprah show. So you might get a podcast on that. But right now I'm just trying to get through what bipolar is. But yeah, so medication, I am a big advocate for medication if you need it. I'm not one to say that you have to stay on it forever. I do have a plan on getting off of it. But as now, especially now with COVID-19 going on, like, I need my meds. Okay. No shame. I'm going to take my meds. So that may be something. The other thing that I kind of touched on too, in terms of treatment and managing this in your life, is stress management strategies. These are going to be things like educating yourself on the disease. I'm not going to say disease, disorder. That's what I'll say. You need to educate yourself on it, because that's something that I did not do when I was 19, 20 years old. And the doctor told me that I had bipolar. But as I began to go on in life, and I'm like, this is something I'm going to live with, like, it's not going to go away. Education was key. And then the other thing too, along with just like therapy, is I really began to unpack the layers of who I am, like really getting to know me. So in terms of self-management strategies, you have to be able to recognize the episode's early symptoms. So early symptoms for me would be like, this is just me. Remember, bipolar and you go through mania, have you spending out of control. So when I begin to notice my spending habits, or if I'm not setting a budget, or if I'm running up my credit cards, something's happening. Even if things on the surface seem to be going well, I know something on the inside is happening. Or if my sleeping pattern is off, right? So I even went so far as to purchase an Apple Watch so I can manage my sleep habits and routines. So when I begin to notice that my sleep pattern is off, something is going on within me. Or if I also have apps that I download on my mobile device that allows me to record my mood every day and the things that happen. So if I work, school, travel, if I podcast, if I had sex, if I, you know, drank alcohol, if I spent time with my family, read a book, like I journal and track these things, and I begin to track my mood. Was it a really great day? Was it okay day? Was it mean day? Was it bad day? Was it a horrible day? And then I begin to track the activities and things that I was doing, so I begin to follow the trends. So I'm very intentional about my self-management and very in tune with that, but that's taking years to accomplish. So that's why therapy and medication and all of those things will help you be able to come to that, but I'm very in tune with myself, very in tune. And that's something that I encourage you to do. Even if you do not have bipolar, be in tune with yourself, and you'll know when it's off. And then you'll also know when people come in and try to shift your energy and your space and your peace. Hello, somebody. When they try to shift your peace and your energy is off, you baby say, no, 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 to the left, because you're messing up what I have here. So that's something. All right. So the other thing too is like complementary health approaches. So these would be like aerobic exercises, your faith, prayer, support, meditation, all of these things. But of course, these do not replace your therapy. You need your therapy. But I noticed when I am off medication, how I'm able to manage best with no meds is when I'm eating right and my body lets me know that it has to be plant-based, not even vegan. So plant-based is like not even like tofu and that faux meat or anything. Like if it did not come out the ground, I'm not eating it. That's when my body and my mind is most clearest, and when I'm exercising, like at my fittest. So that's when I'm typically off meds. But I haven't made that commitment yet, so whatever. I'll get back there. In the meantime, I like to call it my morning cocktail. Honey, I just take my cocktail in the morning and get through the day. So yeah. Now, with bipolar, there's some things I think about, and I wrote some things down on my notes. But the thing that worries me the most with all of this is how this impacts my kids. Because like I was telling you, sometimes with it, especially in the depression stage, I can be depressed for a whole 2 weeks. Like, don't want to get out of bed, don't want to do anything. But meanwhile, I have these little people who I take care of. And sometimes it's really, when I say it's, oh my God, when it takes Jesus himself to come down off of the cross, ascend down from the heavens to be able to get me up to do something, to take care of my kids. And I wonder how that feels. And it's to the point, like, even sometimes, like, they'll try to come and give me a hug or, but sometimes I don't even want to be hugged or held or anything like that. So I often think about them and how they feel having a mother with bipolar. You know what I mean? So I do try to talk to them about, I'm not going to say try. I talk to them about it and I educate them about it. And that was even more motivation for me to practice the treatments and practice how to live a life managing it. So the therapy, the medication, the self-management strategies, the health approaches, all of those things, because I'm like, this isn't just me. It impacts my participants when I'm at work. It impacts my relationships. It impacts my finances, my children, my family, my friends. So I have to be mindful of that, that it's not just for me, but most importantly, it is for me. So where I'm at today is, as I mentioned, I'm very in tune with myself. I'm very intentional about unpacking things and being reflective. And because of the extreme highs and lows of bipolar, what it has allowed me to do is when I am faced with certain situations, I'm able to really like think about those things and making sure that my response in the conversations that I'm having are appropriate. Like, it's not based on something that I'm assuming or some hyped up emotion. Like, it's legit. It's the fact of what's going on. And because I have worked so hard at it, right now I've been living with this for over about 20 years. In the last 7-8 years of it, just, I'm not going to say mastering it, or I have mastered it, but just really reaching like a somewhat mastery level of it. I know when I'm saying something, like, that's legit how I feel about things. And it has caused me to be a better communicator. I'm very much so a communicator of my feelings. I'm not perfect in that regards, but I'm not afraid of having the tough conversations. And the beautiful thing, once again, the silver lining of it all is that it has given me opportunity to be able to apply empathy and grace in situations with others. So when I see people struggling through certain things or responding in a certain way, I have a level of compassion towards that and can see it. Like, I see people easily. Not just like the physical part, but I see people. I see the struggles. I see the things that they're dealing with. And it allows me to meet people where they are and accept them. And because of it, most times in situations, people are very open with me and they want to talk to me about things. So that is some benefits that have come out of this whole thing that I don't know if I would have necessarily been able to get to this place without it. I always hope to be. The other thing about it is it does cause me to constantly work on myself. I'm always working on myself. And whenever I'm like, oh, I found this out and I feel like complete and I've learned everything I need to know, life has a way of presenting something to me or triggering something in me. And it's like, okay, there's more work to do. And I'm so happy to do the work. And I'm thankful to God that I want to do the work to make myself better and to be more in tune with myself. And with that, it has helped in so many of my relationships that it's enjoyable for me. So yeah, but anywho, so helping yourself, and I'm going to wrap things up. I'm just going to go through a few of these, few other things and wrap things up. So if you have bipolar and it comes time that you need to help yourself, this condition can exert control over your thoughts. It interferes with your relationships. It is not treated. And it can also lead to crisis. So you want to make sure that you are managing the illness. You want to pinpoint your stressors, pinpoint your triggers. And if there are any specific things in your life, people, places, jobs, holidays, any of these things that is making your mood unstable, eliminate it. So now you all know why I'm like, ain't nothing to cut this hoe off. I will cut it off at the knees. I'm not compromising my peace for it. I'm not. So hopefully now you understand why I do that. I will cut your ass off, okay? Because you will not trigger me and have me suicidal in somebody's hospital bed. You get what I'm saying? Hello? 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 No, not today. And then also when you're feeling the mania, of course, yeah, you're going to feel good at first. But then it can spiral. It can spiral into reckless driving because I done bust a tire too. It can spiral into violence because, you know, Nucky If You Buck was my soundtrack. And it can also go into hypersexuality when you out here just busting it open. You know what I'm saying? You don't want to do that. Okay. Right? Don't do that. And then also the depression can have you feeling tired and not able to sleep. If you are experiencing all of these things or some of these things or anything like that, don't do drugs. Don't drink. Even though I'm saying that having your martini, don't do it, sis. Don't do it, bro. Don't do it. These substances can disturb your emotional balance and it can, you know, negatively impact your medication. So you don't want to drink and drug. You also want to establish a routine. So for those of you who know me personally, you know, this is another reason why I'm so detail oriented and I appreciate structure with things. So you want to have your routine. You want to be committed to your routine and take control of it. And it does help to prevent depression and mania. You also want to make sure that you are exercising, getting good sleep, and so forth. And then you want to learn. You live, you learn. You don't win or lose. You win, you learn. So you want to learn from your past experience. Recognize those patterns and making sure that you are writing them down and taking notes of those things. You want to make sure that you are forming healthy relationships with yourself and with others around you. Okay. Last thing I want to touch on is if you have a friend or family member with bipolar, the first thing you want to do is recognize the early symptoms because you may be able to help prevent some type of serious episode. So symptoms of mania and depressions oftentimes have warning signs. So the beginning part of mania, a person typically feel good. So that means with their family and friends may not want to seek help. So they may not want to go to help with that because they're feeling really good. So, but if you're noticing that your family member is like having lack of sleep or speaking quickly or, you know, just doing a whole lot of things, just all over the place, where in my case, have painted their whole downstairs with two colors and trims and all of that in 3 days. Hello, somebody. Step in there. The other thing you want to do is communicate. Not everyone enjoys confronting the person head on or the problem head on, but you do want to have those tough conversations with your family members, even if they may get upset, but it's all in your approach. Okay. So that brings me to my last tip for you. You want to react calmly and rationally, even in situations where your family members or friends may go off. Right? Ranting, yelling, doing all those things. The important thing for you is to remain calm. You want to listen to them and make them feel understood and then work towards a positive outcome. So even if you think about what I told you earlier, what Moms and Martinis is all about, it's all about creating a safe space to have tough conversations about the obstacles we face while navigating this journey called life. And sometimes that includes the mental health conversation. So thank you so much for listening in this week. I hope that you learned something, you know, a little bit more about me, and I'll come back and tell you about some other crazy stuff that has happened because it's bipolar and how it has impacted me both negatively and positively. It's not the end all be all. So continue to break the stigma, spread the word about it, because believe it or not, 1 in 5 adults in the U.S. are experiencing mental health illness. So y'all get checked out. Get checked out. Okay. 1 in 5. So 1 in 5. Typically, I have about 500 downloads. So 1 in 5, at least 100 of y'all need help.